Okay. Well, good morning, everybody. Wow. A lot of people in the room. This is great. My name is Robert Green. I'm a technical evangelist with Microsoft. I'm from the corporate office in Redmond. Great to see you all here. And this talk is using MVVM so you can write better code and less code. And before we get too far into it, let me make sure that I explain what this talk is. So this talk is not a advanced talk about various MVVM frameworks. There are a lot of great frameworks out there, and I'll mention them. But it's basically, this talk is to get you started using MVVM. If you're building XAML applications, I think MVVM is a great pattern to use. If you start by adopting one of the frameworks, that can get kind of complicated because the frameworks are very deep, they're very powerful, but if you don't really understand what MVVM is, then it's hard to get started with the frameworks. It's like learning how to swim by diving into the deep end. So I purposely made this a 200-level talk, and the idea is that we're going to understand what MVVM is, what the various pieces are, what the purpose is, why you should use it, and then we'll get to the point where you would now be ready to explore using some frameworks. So if that does not match what you were hoping to see, now would be a good time to head out for another talk. But I see only one person left, so I think we're in sync on this. Okay, good. Now I'll tell you that if you like what you see, fill out the evals. you could possibly win one of 20 prizes. So go to techdaysapp.nl and give me your feedback. Very interested to know what you think about this talk. If you have any questions on MVVM, feel free to email me, rogreen@microsoft.com. There's my Twitter handle. And so let's learn about MVVM. So first of all, what is it? MVVM is one of many UI design patterns. And we know that UI is declarative. We've got HTML, we've got XAML, and those are markup languages. Hypertext markup language, extensible application markup language. It's nothing more than language for the renderer, the UI renderer, to draw the screen. So you have a bracket and it says button and another bracket and something else in there, and that way when at runtime the rendering agent says, oh, he wants or she wants a button on the screen about here, so I'll draw a button. And then you declare what the UI should look like. You have tools that help you, of course. You've got the designers where you can drag and drop controls on, but what gets written is the markup language. And it's nothing more than what looks like XML. It's basically a variant of XML because it's an ML. And then your business logic, your data access, is all written in code. Okay, so this is a great way to separate the presentation layer from the business data layer. And that's obviously one of the main things that MVVM gives you is layers of abstraction, being able to separate things out. That way, if you make a change in the UI, it doesn't necessarily affect the business code or the data code and vice versa. It also gives you the ability to create the layers in different tools. This has always kind of been the dream that you've got the designers who use Blend or Dreamweaver or something and they build the UI, and then the coders use Visual Studio and they get along together. Maybe the developer does a quick layout of the code of the design, hands it over to the designer who makes it look like something that a real person would use, not something ugly that we developers would create, and then we developers write code. In the real world, that doesn't always necessarily happen because it turns out the designers charge a lot of money. so I don't know if people, I don't know how often that actually happens in the real world, but that's kind of the goal. And it also enables independent testing of the code. You can test the UI, you can test the code. So abstracting and separating out the layers is good. And design patterns help you do that. There are a number of UI design patterns, MVC, MVP, MVVM. And we used to think that MVC was what the web guys did, and MVVM is what the XAML guys did, and then there's also MVP. But it turns out you can do MVVM in JavaScript code, you can do MVC in XAML code. So the various patterns aren't quite as unique from each other as we used to think. But kind of the default is that if you're doing an ASP.NET application, you'd use MVC. Visual Studio makes it very easy to do that. And if you're using XAML, then you use MVVM. And Visual Studio does not make it easy to do that at the moment. But as we'll see, it's really not that hard to get started. So MVVM stands for Model View View Model. And it actually was introduced in 2005 by a guy named John Gossman, who was a developer on what was called the Avalon team. Avalon was the code word for WPF, which is Windows Presentation Foundation. So all the way back in 2005, he wrote a blog about this UI pattern. And in the Model View View Model, the model represents the data and the business logic, the view represents the UI, and the view model handles any task that's not in the model or the view, which is basically everything else. So you've got your data, you've got your UI, and then you've got code. And if you think about it, every single application we've ever written has those three elements. There's data, there's what the user sees, and then there's code that ties the two together. So MVVM is the same way. The model part of it represents the data. The view part of it represents the XAML pages, the actual XAML, which is the UI. And then the view model handles everything else. And in sort of this idealized world of MVVM, that's the way you would have it. You'd have no code behind, in a pure sense, never any code behind at all in your view. And your view model handles everything else. We're not going to get that far because in this talk because you wind up, I think, to get to that point, unless you're potentially using a framework, it's an awful lot of work for maybe a diminishing return. So at the end of this talk, we are still going to have some code in the code behind. We're not going to get to the point where we have none, but we're going to take massive amounts of code out of the code behind and move it into the view model. Now, it is a lot of work. It's harder to do. So what are the benefits? Well, the first is you get your separation of concerns. You have your data and your view, and then you have your code, which does mean that you can have a designer and a coder working on their parts of the application at the same time. It also means that you could have two coders working on different parts of the application at the same time. It gives you the ability to do unit testing. The slide says better unit testing, but I guess I'll say unit testing. It gives you the ability to test pieces of the application rather than easily test pieces of the application rather than having to run the application from scratch just to test that your calculator function can add two numbers together and do it correctly. Okay? And then you get better reuse of UI and code. If you've separated out the UI from the code and you've separated the code into discrete chunks, it makes it a lot easier to reuse them. So there are a lot of benefits, and as we get into each part of MVVM throughout the talk, we'll mention what the benefit is. And you'll kind of get a sense of, you know, as you might expect, you get most of your benefits at the beginning, and then as you get into more and more pieces, you might start to get fewer benefits, and it gets a little bit harder. And what you get to do is you get to make the trade-off of how much of it you want to use and when. So here's the code behind pattern, where the UI has the XAML, it has all the code behind. You may or may not have a services or logic layer if you're calling a WCF service, for example, then we'll call that a services layer, and then you've got your data. And this, of course, is, I won't ask here how many people do code behind because, you know, this is an MVVM talk and you probably shouldn't, but at some point in their careers, how many of you have put logic in the code behind the forms? Okay. And how many of you who have done that think that's the absolute best way to go, and there's no reason to do it any differently? Don't raise your hand. Okay, good. Okay, so in the model view view model pattern, our view contains all the XAML, little to no code behind. The model contains the data and the services, and then the view model is everything else, the data binding, visual state, commands, ideally everything, including the view model is supposed to be in charge of displaying dialogues in the UI, which I don't necessarily always do because that part That part can sometimes get harder. So the view knows about the view model, but the view should not know about the model. And I think this is a very important piece of the puzzle, right? There's data. The view model knows about the model, but the view model should not necessarily know about the view. So in other words, you've got data. Customers, projects is the example we're going to use. The view model knows all about that. The view model knows how to talk to the data. The view knows how to ask the view model to send it back data, customers and projects, but it doesn't know how the data is put together necessarily. And it doesn't necessarily even know the names of the columns in the database table or the names coming back from the service, because the view model is the intermediary that hands the view the actual data. And when the view makes changes to the data, it sends those changes to the view model and says, would you please pass this on to the real live data? So the view never talks to the actual data, it talks to the view model. And the view model will talk to the view and talk to the data. So you get those separations there, which gives you that layer of abstraction. If you then decide to change your data model, right, you were using a WCF service and you decided that you're not going to switch over to Web API, that's a fair amount of code changes on the service. It could be a fair amount of code changes in the view model, but the view never changes because the view is expecting a customer name and a list of projects that have project name and description and due date, etc. And the view doesn't care where that data comes from. The view just wants the data. It's the view model's job to deal with that. So if you change the data source, you change the way you retrieve data, then you only have to change the code that's talking to the data. You don't have to change the view at all. So the model's got the data access. It's got the business logic. Now, if you're using WCF and you create a service reference, then you probably know that in that proxy class, it creates it creates classes for each entity. So in our example of customers and projects, when we create a service reference to our WCF service, we'll get a customer class or table and a project class or table in the proxy that's already generated. So there's your model, and it's typically, there's your model. You can use that if you want, or you could create your own model. So you can accept the model generated by the proxy generation, or you can choose your own. If they're exactly the same, you may just stick with the one the proxy gives you. If you're retrieving data from multiple data sources, then you'd want your own, so it's kind of up to you. If you want the most control, then you'd create your own model. Ideally, you'd use a repository pattern for more abstraction. That's a little bit of a more advanced scenario, potentially. And of course, since the model is just classes, you can reuse it across WPF, Windows 8, Windows Phone, Silverlight, etc. You get total reuse out of the model because, again, it's just classes. The view, you'll typically have one view for each piece of UI. So if you have a customer's page, you'd have a customer's view. If you have a view that displays a customer, then you'd have a customer view. What a lot of people do is they'll create a view for user controls. So you have a page that has the grid and then, order header and order details, and the details is in a user control. Then you'd have a view for the order header and a view for the order detail. And this code is typically going to live in the application main project. You wouldn't necessarily put that in its own library because we don't really have reuse across WPF to Windows 8 to Windows Phone. Hope to get there someday, but we're not really quite there. We're getting quite a bit closer with the universal apps now in Windows 8.1, Update 1, and Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1. You actually can put XAML in that shared folder and share it across the two. But if you're not quite there yet, if you're still on Windows Phone 8 or you're maybe just going across WPF and Windows 8, then we don't really have XAML reuse. So the view is always going to live in the main project. The model you could put in a portable class library, and the view models you could put in a portable class library. So So the view model, as I said, its job is to coordinate the interaction between the view and the model. And there's typically going to be one view model per view. You'd have a customer's page.xaml and a customer's view model, and then you'd have a customer page.xaml and a customer view model. All right, so that's typical. Presentation logic, methods for binding to data, the states, commanding so that you don't actually put the code in the code behind. When you click a button, where does that code live? We don't really want it living in the code behind. We really want it living in the view model. So the best way to do that is through commands. We'll see how to do that. And then if it's code that can be reused across the various flavors of XAML, then it can go in a separate project, which should typically be a portable class library. But code that's specific to the version of the app you're building would often live in the same project as the views. So you would see a project that has the application, you know, it's the customer's application, it's got views, and it has view models because they're specific to that implementation. Then there might be a portable class library that has more generic view models. Okay? All right, so enough talking, more demo. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take an application. We're going to start with all code behind, no MVVM in it at all. And then we're going to, piece by piece, move code into the various layers of MVVM. I'm going to follow along on my notes. These notes are written up on my blog. So this document is what this blog post is. I have a reference to this in the slides later on. And I also did this as an episode of my Visual Studio Toolbox show. I would say after this, if you want to go view that, you can. But this is being recorded, so afterwards, you can watch this instead. Or we can compare the two and see which one I did a better job on. Hopefully this one. Okay, so here is an application. It is the customer's application. It is calling a WCF service to display customers and projects. And if you're at my talk yesterday on building Windows 8 line of business applications, yes, this is the exact same application that I used then. So it displays customers. This is a Windows 8 application, although nothing I'm going to talk about here today really is specific to Windows 8. This could be a WPF app. It could be a Windows Phone app. MVVM is a XAML thing. So it displays customers. I click on a customer. I see projects. I click on a project. I can edit or delete the project. And the application works just fine. And if we look at the application, we see that there's a service reference to the WCF service. We see that there are views. There's a main page, which is the customer's page. There's a page for projects, a page for customer, each individual customer, a page for each individual project, and then we have a date time to string converter, which I use on the due date for the projects. Very simple application. Now, I have a views folder, not because I'm using MVVM, but just because it seemed like a good place to put my views. Okay? And then if we look in the code behind for each of these, right, there's the code. We have customers, which is an observable collection. We have a reference to the WCF proxy class. And in the load state, we turn on the progress ring, create a new instance of the proxy class, get the customers asynchronously. We're using a collection view source in here, which is right here. That's a collection view source called customers view source. So we populate that with the customers here. Set the selected item of the customer's grid view to null because I don't want any customers highlighted when the application starts. Then I've got a data template to show each individual customer. Then I've got add and edit buttons in the command bar down at the bottom, in the app bar down at the bottom. Then I have a page title that says My Customers. There's the progress ring, and then here's the customer's grid source. And the item source for that is set to customer's view source, and that's why the grid shows up with customers in it. Then we've got some code behind for selection changed and for item click. Selection change, then if you actually did select a customer, then I show the app bar, because what happens is if I select a customer, either by swiping on it or right-clicking on it, then I get a button to add a new customer or to edit that existing customer. And then if we click on a customer, we need to know what customer we clicked on. That's e.clickedItem. Cast that to customer, grab the ID, stick it in an application level variable, and then navigate to the projects page, passing that customer ID, okay, etc. The customer page works similarly, projects page works similarly. So customer page, we have a data context equals default view model. That is put in there by Visual Studio. I don't actually use that line of code. I could have deleted it. I was just too lazy to delete it. When you create a page in Visual Studio, it adds this line of code, but we're not actually using that. We set the data context. Where do we set the data context? Sorry? A bit down. There it is. Thank you. I knew it was in there somewhere. We set the data context of the page to the customer. So we pass a customer ID. We go ask the WCF service to get that customer, and we set the data context of that page. Okay? So fairly straightforward XAML, very straightforward code behind. What's wrong with this application? Well, first of all, there's nothing wrong with this application because it works. It does exactly what it's supposed to do. The users are very happy with it. They can view their customers. They can add and delete customers. They can add and delete projects, and it works reasonably well, especially since it's calling a service on this machine. It doesn't have to go out over the internet or the intranet. It's a very good application. It works great. The customers love it. As a developer, though, what's wrong with this application? Well, first of all the code's in one place. Right, all the code's in the code behind. So it makes it difficult to test. What if we wanted to test this line of code or this code? We want to test that when we pass in a customer ID, the service returns the right information, and the page title gets set correctly. In order to test these three lines of code, we have to start the app from scratch every single time. Bring all the customers down. Click on a customer. Go to that customer page just to test these three lines of code. So think about when you're testing your applications and you aren't using unit testing and you start from scratch. Think of all the time you spend not testing that line of code. Let's say we wind up having to run the test 100 times. And it takes a minute and a half each time. And of that minute and a half, 1 minute 15 seconds is getting to the place where we can then test in 15 seconds what we're trying to test. You've now wasted 100 minutes of running the application, not actually doing testing. So what we really want to do is get to a point where we could write unit tests. And that way, we could test these three lines of code without running the actual application. Each individual time you do it, it may not seem like a big idea, but think about over and over and over again the testing you do, the time you spend running the application so you can get to the part where you actually want to test. Bad enough in a simple application like this, think about a fairly complex application. And then how would you do automated testing? Let's say you want to write automated tests, you know, that run through code like this, that you could start it, go to lunch, come back, and see if the tests work. How do you automate a test like this? Well, you can do coded UI testing, but That's not necessarily easy to do. It's not that easy to set up. And you know what you'd really like to be able to do is just run individual lines of code. Then think about reuse. If I write another application that works with this data, how do I reuse my data code? Well, I reuse by copying and pasting from one app into another app, and then if I go and make a change to that code, you know, we get out of sync. So there's a number of reasons here why the code behind model, although it's a fairly easy way to write this application, really does wind up kind of handcuffing us later on. And then what happens if I want to hand off some code to another team member. I'm falling behind. I get some help. Somebody comes in to help me with this application. And I say, okay, you're in charge of projects. I want you to work on the part where we can edit and save projects. Well, to do that, you need the project page. I say, well, I'll work on the UI. You work on the code. How do you do that? Because it's all in one file, right? Makes it very, very difficult to do. So what we now want to start doing is start getting the code out of nothing but the code behind and start abstracting this into more layers of abstraction. For that, we'll start using MVVM. Okay, so the first thing we're going to do is create view models. So if we now look at this code, I still have views, and the views have code behind. But now what I've done is I've created a view model for each view. Okay? And remember, the view model, at the highest level, it's everything else. Remember, our goal is to get everything out of the code behind into view models. So the first thing we're going to do, add a view models folder, and create a main view model that matches with the main page. And what this is going to have is a public property called customers, which is an observable collection. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to know that this can change, right? So what I need to do is implement iNotifyPropertyChanged, but I don't want to do that in every single view model. So I'm going to create a view model base which implements iNotifyPropertyChanged. Okay, so every framework, every use of MVVM always starts off with something in view model base at the bare minimum, and view model base is typically what it's called, so that's probably a good naming convention to stick to. This is the bare minimum of what will be in there, the ability to notify that properties have changed, of course, for the data binding, right? Some people in their view model base will have a lot more in there, but for our purposes, this is all we need. Okay. So I have an implementation of, I have an instance of this proxy class. What I'm going to do in this example is just move our data access code out of the code behind into the view model. So I have a property called customers. I have a property called selected customer because I need to know what the customer is that you selected, when you right clicked on it so that you want to edit it. Okay? And here's where I store the ID of the selected customer to that application level current customer ID. When we create a new instance of the view model, we create a new instance of this observable collection. Then we have an asynchronous method called getCustomers, which is a task. And what that's going to do is call the customer service client, bring back customers, and then this service returns a list. I always have my services return a list because I want to make my services generic. So I always return a list, and then I loop through and fill out the observable collection. I'm not 100% sure if that's always the best way to go, but that's the pattern I follow. So now this getCustomers method, it doesn't return anything because what it's doing is it's setting that public property of the view model. It's filling out this customers property of the view model. And then in the main page, now we are using this data context. We're setting the data context of the page and we're binding it to main view model. So we're going to create an instance of main view model and then we're going to call that getCustomers async method. And then this main view model will contain a property called customers. And that's what we're going to set the grid view to. We're going to bind the item source of the grid view to the customer's property of main view model. And then in the code behind, we're just going to create a new instance of main view model, which creates that empty observable collection of customer as the customer's property. And then when this loads, rather than talking to the service, remember in the previous example, should probably call that up so we can bounce back and forth. That was customers know MVVM. Right, in the previous example, we actually talked directly to the service. We talked directly to the data and call get customer async in the main page. Here it is. We talk directly to the service, call the get customers async of the service, and then bind the view source to customers. In the MVVM model, we ask the view model to do that. Right? The view never talks to the data. The view talks to the view model. It's the view model is the valet, if you will, of the view. Right? The view says to the main view model, get customers. Whatever that means, get customers. And then the main page says, whatever you stick in that public property customers is what I'm binding to. Okay? And then at this point, we haven't really changed any of the rest of this code. In the customer page, we've got a customer view model. So we're going to bind the data context of the customer page to that. The customer view model has a property called selected customer. It has a property called title, which is what's going to go on the page. It has a result, which is how we're going to know whether or not operations like add or save or delete worked. Right? When we create an instance of this customer view model, we set selected customer to a new instance of the customer class. And then when we get a customer, we call the service, bring back the customer, set that to selected customer. Then we set the title property to the name of that customer. And the reason I want to do that is because on the customer page, I don't want to have code like this where I set the title of the page to customer.name, right? So here's the view, once again, knowing what's in the model. What I want to be able to do is this. I want to set the title of the page to a property of the view model. And if you think about it, this is a very simple example. You might say, well, that seems like an awful lot of work. Why can't you just say customer.name? Well, what if you had to do calculations to get that title? What if that title showed not only the customer, but also the total number of days we are behind on the project, the amount of money we've billed them, the amount of money they haven't paid us yet, and the amount of money we're going to lose because we're already 7 days behind on the project? That's an awful lot of math to do. You don't want that in the view. That's not the view's job to do calculations on the database. That's the view model's job. So you'd stick that code in the view model, and then you'd have the view model set that title property, and then the view just binds directly to it. All right, that's another good example of the abstraction. And then our customer view model has a method to save the customer, which talks to the service and sets the result to either success or failed. And then same thing for delete customer, which calls the WCF service. And again, this could be any service. I'm just using WCF here. It could be an Azure mobile service, could be web API. Doesn't really matter. And the result here gets set to failed or success. So again, the view doesn't know what the service returns, right? The service returns this customer was saved or this customer was removed. The view model knows about that. The view only knows success or failed, right? So again, additional layers of abstraction. We accomplish that by using view models. And again, all we need to do in the page is create a new instance of the view model. And then in the XAML, again, another line of code that's taken out of the code behind. I don't have to say this.dataContext equals. I do that in the XAML. And that way out here, I know exactly what the data binding's to. And then we bind the grid view to a property of the view model. Okay, so now what we've accomplished in this step one is to take the data access code out of the view, get it into the view model, which immediately gives us a separation of concerns. We could take this view model and potentially stick it in a reusable library, a portable class library, if you will, and then if I have three or four different applications that talk to the same data, and they all do the same thing, you can view, add, and delete, it's fairly simple, this code's now easily reusable. Okay, and I can also easily make changes to this. I could have somebody come and work on this view model. If I'm still working on the UI, you know, we're running late in the project, I've got a new guy, new programmer that's come in to help, I can say to that programmer, you own the data code, I'll work on the UI. Now we can actually do that in source control because the data access is in different files than the UI. Okay? All right, so any questions on that? Kind of makes sense? All right. Yes?
On your main view model, you got the method to get the customers, but you bind on the public property, but you fill in the private property of the customer.
Okay, so the question is, I'm binding on the public property, which is... On the main view model, there it is.
You got the list of customers.
Yep.
And on your view, you were binding on the public observer.
Right, in the view I bind on customers. But here I am filling out the private.
How does that phrase property change the method
that
knows your public properties change?
Well, when I change this, that is a set, right? So that's so at the point that I fill out little customers, that's calling this code and raising the property change there, right?
No, because you're setting the private property. But it's an observable collection, so if you add items in the fire state, also on the public property.
Yeah. Yeah. So the observable collection, when I add to it, that's firing this. Yeah. No?
It has its own.
All right. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah.
Okay. So that kind of makes sense? Okay. Okay. So let's actually afterwards come up, let's talk about this, because if this code can be cleaned up, that'd be good. I mean, the code does work, but if there's extraneous code that I should do better, I'm always interested in that. Okay. Any other questions? Okay, so now one thing that we have here is the ability to test this code outside of the UI, because we could create a unit test on this method which receives customers, we could create a unit test on this code that retrieves a customer, saves or deletes a customer. We could test this code right here without ever having to run the UI. So we would now have the ability to create a bunch of unit tests on our data access code and run those in an individual fashion or an automated fashion, run just the code that works with a customer, run all of them, do that automated. So we now have much more testability as well as reusability. And I think that this right here is the bare minimum. We're now doing MVVM, right? We went from doing no MVVM to we are now actually doing MVVM because we're using a view model. And if we did nothing, you do nothing more than get your data access code out of the view into a view model, you're doing MVVM. Are you using all of MVVM? Of course not. But if somebody looked at this and said, you're not using MVVM, all you've done is put your data access code in your view model, you'd say, what is MVVM? M, I have a model in my service reference. V, I have views, and I got a view model. So don't tell me I'm not doing MVVM, right? But we can do so much more. Okay, so in the next version, let's switch over to the other instance. Let's load up step 2. In this instance, I decide that I want to separate my model out. Yes, I have a model in here, and if we show all files, right there, in, if we show all files and go into the service reference under customer service, down into reference.svc map, down into reference.cs, there's customer, there's project. So there's our model. And again, we can accept that if we want, or we can create our own. In this example, I don't know that there's a huge benefit to creating our own model, except that it's a little bit easier to see what's in the model. I don't have to show all files and then drill down into reference.svc map. But I'm using the exact same, probably using the exact same field names with the exact same types. But you might have a service that returns more data than you actually want to use in the application. You might have a service that returns, who knows, maybe it returns the column names in a foreign language. You're calling some service that somebody else wrote, and they don't use the exact language that you want to use. So in this case, we're going to create our own models. Okay. And in addition, this makes it a little bit easier, I think, for us to change data sources. We're talking directly to SQL Server. Then we go to using a WCF service. Then we decide, no, we really want to use a web API. And then we say, no, you know what? I really want this data. This data is all in an Azure mobile service. Let's use that instead. It makes it a lot easier to swap back and forth if you have your own models created. And that way, you just get to stick to the names of the columns that you want and the data types that you want, and then your view model wouldn't necessarily have to change if you've got your own model sitting up in front of it. Okay? All right, so now what we're going to do is we're also going to add another layer of abstraction. In the previous version, the view model talked directly to the WCF service. Well, we can abstract that. And we're going to, in this case, create a service layer, which is going to do that. So we're going to add a layer of abstraction in between the view model and the actual service itself. And that's going to be called Customer Data Service, which implements an interface called iCustomer Data Service. So the first thing I did was I created iCustomer Data Service, which has all of the methods, including that get project name, which months ago I decided I didn't want to use anymore, and I left it in there. So there's methods to get customers, get an individual customer, get the customer name, save and delete customers and projects, all in this interface. And then each, I could have various implementations of this, customer data service that talks to the WCF service, customer data service that talks to an Azure mobile service, and it would make it a little bit easier for me to switch back and forth. Or a version of this that talks to a SQLite database versus one that talks to a service. So that way, if I'm switching from online to offline, I could actually talk to different implementations of this data service, and my view models would never have to change because the view model is talking to this data service. So main view model now, it doesn't talk to the service. It doesn't talk to the WCF service. It talks to this intermediate layer, customer data service. Okay. This would also give me the ability to, for my unit testing, create a fake data service that, you know, just returns hard-coded values because I want to test what happens when I work with the data. So for The purpose of that, I'm not testing whether the service returns the correct information. I'm testing whether the app does the right things with that information. So I could create a fake data service, you know, using whether it's an XML file or a JSON file, or, you know, if you build like the Grid View app or the Hub app in Windows Store, you know, it creates that data source, that sample data source. You could create your own sample data source and have an implementation of this service that works with that. That way, you could run these tests on working with data without ever having to talk to the data, which if you're working with Azure, saves money because, you know, Azure charges by usage. If you're working with a WCF service, it certainly saves time, and you could test the entire application in an offline mode, whether you're on a train or an airplane or whatever. So again, another good reason to create this layer of abstraction. So our customer data service has the exact same code. The data access code has now been moved from the view model into this data service, and it does the exact same thing it did, whether it's getting customers or getting customer name or whatever. This is what now talks to the WCF service. And because it's implementing an interface, it would be easy to swap them out. And then we could use dependency injection or use a service locator on the fly to swap out those. I didn't implement that in any of these examples, but we certainly could do that. Okay? All right. So now the view doesn't change. We still create an instance of this customer view model. The view just talks to the customer view model. The view doesn't care, doesn't need to know, doesn't care, doesn't rely on what the customer view model does. That's the benefit of abstractions. All the customer page knows is that I can call into the customer view model and I can rely on the customer view model sending or setting a customer property, which is, all right, we set to customer view model, and then right there. In the stack panel, my data context is set to selected customer, which is a property of the customer view model. So again, the view just relies on there being a selected customer that is an instance of the customer class. Now, the view doesn't know what that means, instance of customer class. The view just knows that there's a selected customer property that is going to contain things like name and city and contact. Again, a good reason to use your own model, because this view is hard-coded, if you will, to expect a contact. Maybe the data source has contact name and the service returns name of contact, but your view is set to name, so that's a reason you'd create your own model so that you never have to change the view. This view never changes now. We're doing multiple things with the view model, abstracting out, creating various layers. The view doesn't care. That's the whole beauty of MVVM and the whole purpose of this, because I can change this view model over and over and over again, create various layers of abstraction, never have to change the view. The model stays the same. The view model just keeps getting more and more advanced or complex or easier to work with. All right, so the model's got the data, not the data. So the model here is the model the way we want it, which, again, in this example, is exactly what the service returns, but we've abstracted it out so we're protected. This is why we know that the view never has to change, because this selected customer contains these fields. We can swap data sources without modifying the view model, because the view model just talks to the customer data service. So whether we're talking to mobile service, WCF service, web API, fake data, SQL Server, sample data, or, you know, random data generator, the view model doesn't care, because the view model says to the data service, hey, send me back a list of customers, however you do it. And then again, we can be working on the view model while we tell the data person, hey, go get me data. And then when you learn that the data source has changed, you as the owner of the view model don't care. Your code never changes as long as this get customer async creates a customer, right? So better testability, better reuse, better flexibility, and the separation of concerns means that pieces of the application are now kind of set in stone and don't have to keep changing. Okay, so that's good. So we've worked with view models. We introduced a model. Let's go look in the customer page, for example, and look at what code is in here. This code's needed. We need to create a customer view model. Initialize component, that's good. Navigation helpers to load and save state, that's fine. Now in our load state, we have some code in here. We do need to call get customer. This is code to save the state, code to turn on the progress ring, code to know. Yeah, we're working with state here. So, you know, in a Windows Store app, when you switch away from a Windows Store app, it gets suspended. And if you open a bunch of other applications and Windows is running low on memory, Windows reserves the right to terminate the application. So this, of course, never happens in a desktop application. You can switch away from it and leave forever. The state never goes away. But in a Windows Store application, Windows does reserve the right to shut your applications down. So it's a good idea to be saving state. So especially in a line of business application, if I'm on the customer page and I've entered customer information, I'm adding a customer, I've entered all their customer information, I'm then called away to answer the phone, I got to switch to another app, and then I go to lunch, and then I come back, and it turns out that Windows has shut my application down. When I start that application up, there's two choices. I've lost all my data, which doesn't make me happy, or all of my data magically appears, which does make me happy as the user. So this code here will save the state and ensure that if the application gets shut down, the data I've entered is still there. That's kind of cool. Now, should this be in the view model? Maybe ideally. Is it a problem that it's in the code behind? No, not really. All right, now when we save, we're going to call the view model and call save customer. And when we delete, we're going to call the view model and call delete customer. We really don't want this kind of code in the view behind. The click event handler we also have in the main page. The selection changed. Customer's grid view item click, as well as the customer's grid view selection change. So we're going to try and get rid of some of this code from the code behind. The add, the edit button clicks. This code doesn't need to be in here. So our next step is going to be to try to get rid of some of that code. And so that is in step 3. Okay, so what we're going to do in our view models is we're going to use commands. We're going to use commanding. Who here has used commanding in XAML? One few people. Who here has heard about it but has never used it? And I'll assume that the rest of you haven't used it. Okay. When you create, if we create a brand new project, let's create a blank store app. Okay, we just have mainpage.xaml. If we were to now add a new item and we choose basic page, which has layout awareness, a title, and a back button control, Visual Studio tells us this addition depends on files that are missing from your project. Would you like to add them? You say yes. It then creates this common folder. And one of the things it has in there is a relay command. And so we're going to rely on this relay command to do our commanding. So it's nice. We don't have to write our own commanding file. So we actually have this relay command in here who relays its functionality to other objects by invoking delegates. In other words, it is an intermediary. We can, when we click on a button, we can say, go run a command that lives somewhere else. Okay, so on the main page, for example, and let's compare this to, oh, did I shut the other one down? Wait. What's open here? Two. We are on step three, which for some reason got shut down when I created the new project and then I quit Visual Studio. Okay, so going back to all of the previous examples, for example, in the command bar, in the application bar, when we add, we call add button click, or we call edit button click, or in the grid view, we've got item click. So we have all this code behind. We want to get rid of as much of that as possible. So now in version 3 of this, if we look in the main page, now we're binding to an add customer method and an edit customer method, and we're going to bind to a selected, no, where is it? No, we haven't replaced either of those yet. Okay. So all we've done at this point is bound to add customer and edit customer. Add customer and edit customer live in the view model, and they are relay commands. And their job is to basically be a delegate for the action of clicking the add button or the edit button. Okay, so we set these up as relay commands. And then in the constructor, we say, oh, by the way, when somebody calls the add customer method of this view model, go and run the code in the add method. And when somebody calls the edit customer method of this view model, go and run the code in edit. And then we move the navigate code out of the view into the view model. Okay? And therefore, if we look in main page, if we look in the code behind, there is no add button click. There's no edit button click. We got those out of the view and stuck them in the view model. Oops. Stuck them in the view model right here. Okay? And again, that's another way of getting code out of the code behind. The view shouldn't have to know the mechanics of moving from one view to another view. It's not the view's job. In MVVM, it's all about shirking responsibility, right? It's the ultimate example. The view says, that ain't my job. That's not my job. Talk to the view model. That's not my job, right? I would make a joke here that this was invented by the government, but that's... So it is a funny joke. everybody wants to shirk responsibility. They want to give all of the responsibility to the view model, which is the whole point, right? So in the main page, in the customer page, we've got the save and delete calling commands. So if we go and look at the view model for customer, again, we create these relay commands, save and delete. They are asynchronous, so we call them this way, await and delete. What I had in previous versions of this was actually something like this. I believe it was. Yeah, I had this. You know, and then this says, because this call is not awaited, etc. And then I learned that the correct way to do it in the delegate is to do it this way. And then you actually are calling this asynchronously, and your exception handling will respect the fact that it's an asynchronous call. So we're calling the save and delete methods, which have the exact same code that used to be in the page behind, right? So if we go into the customer page, yeah, here's this code that was calling the view model telling it to save. If it returns success, go to the main page. Same thing for delete. Now that code moves into the view model and doesn't live in the view anymore. All right? So moving to various from code behind to MVVM is a lot of cutting and pasting of code. It's not necessarily re-architecting. There are some times when the code looks a little different, but in this case, this is the exact same code, and I set the result property of the view method, so this is a little bit different, right? Because in the previous case, I was asking whether... Oh, no, I still am setting the result. Okay, so that hasn't changed. Never mind. Because the view model calls save... Yeah, because I'm still calling save customer in the service and then still setting the result. And then if it succeeds, I go to the main page. So again, just taking code out of the view, getting it into the view model. And now this makes it easier to test the save. If I just wanted to test that when I save a customer, it saves correctly and I go to the main page, then I could test this code, you know, put a breakpoint there and, again, have easier testability. Okay? And I'm removing more and more code out of the view behind. So projects, I've got add, edit, and then go back. So in the previous example, and if I run this, so there's no back on the main page. If I go to a customer and I hit back, I'm okay to go backwards. If I edit a customer and I click back, I want to go back to the customer's page. But if I'm editing a project, all right, where do I want to go? I want to go to projects. And now when I go back, I don't want to go back to the project page. I want to go back to the main page. So I need to, in the application, have a little bit more control over what happens when you click back. It's not like in the browser where you literally go to the previous page. I want to have more control over where you go. All right, so in the projects page, or the, yeah, in the projects page, in the back button, I said explicitly go to the main page. And that code was living in the view. Now, in this version, in the project's view model, I created that as a relay command, go back. And I said when the user clicks any button that calls the go back method of the view model, go run the code in go to main page, which goes to the main page. Okay? All right, so benefits of this. The navigation code is now testable outside of the UI. We've got more abstraction. We've got more code out of the view. And we've got the view model now handling stuff that isn't just data. The view model is now handling navigation and is now handling events via commanding. And one less place where the view doesn't know about the model. Okay, and the view doesn't necessarily know about navigation. We're getting closer and closer to this world where the view model does all the work and the view just displays a pretty picture and the data just serves up information. Okay? So we're getting closer, but we're not quite there, right? Because if we look in the main page, here's a good example. In the item click, right? Is that the one? Yeah. So in order to call the projects page, we need to know what customer was clicked. I know e.clickedItem. And I know, and you know, that it's a customer. So in order to get the ID, then I have to call, I have to cast it to customer, and then I can pass it to the projects page. So I'd like to get this code out of here and into the view model. A, because I don't want code in my code behind. B, because my view knows about the model. I don't want it to have to know about the model. Okay. So ideally, we'd use a command here. But then the question is, what do we do with this? We could put a command in the view model, but then how does the view model know which customer was selected? Right? So we need to do something about that. So let's open up step 4. And see what we were able to figure out. So this was in the main page. And in the item click, we've got a method of the view model called navigate to projects page, and we're going to pass it the clicked item. Okay? So I just took this code out of the code behind and moved it into the view model, and I'm passing the selected customer, which is, let's promote that so it stays. I'm passing e.clickedItem into the main view model. It comes in as an object. Here's where I cast it to customer, grab the ID, and navigate to the projects page. So it turns out to be a fairly simple solution. I just create a public method of the main view model. Okay? So I didn't use a command. I could have used a command. I just used a public method. Oh, that's an excellent question. How would I use a command on that? Because by default, it's only available to things like buttons. That's what the next step is. So we will get to that in a second. But that was an excellent question. I have a very good answer for that. Okay. So this is an easy way to do it. We think we'd like to use a command. Very, very good. But this will certainly work. Okay, and again, we've gotten more code out of the UI. We've gotten that code testable out of the UI. The view doesn't know about the model, so now, for the first time, there is no using customers.models in here because the view knows nothing about the model. It only knows about the view models. Okay, so we're getting much, much better. Of course, we're calling methods of the view model, but most of what's in here, we've got a couple calls to the main model, main view model, and then we've got some UI stuff. I personally don't have any problem with having code behind that does UI, like making buttons appear or turning on the progress ring and turning it off. You know, in the perfect world, that code would go into the view model, but I don't have a problem with keeping code that controls the UI in the UI. And you might prefer it. It's kind of up to you whether you go the extra route and get this out of the view. But I personally don't have any problem with it at all. Okay, so your question was, can't we use a command here? Because we still have in the item click and in the selection changed as well, we're still calling event handlers. Okay, so what we'd love to be able to do is do something like this. So on the main view model, we want to have a command, something like this, public relay command, click customer, we'll call it, get private set, right? And then we'd love to be able to do this, call this click customer, and have this be click. And then we'd like to be able to do something like this, private void click, and take this code and put it in here. And then what we'd like to be able to do is go into the page, and for the item click, say something like, what would that look like? Command, right? Command equals, and it's binding. Click customer. That's what we want to do. And Visual Studio says, I don't care what you want to do. You're not doing it. There's no, you can't just wire up a command on grid view for a number of reasons. One, because the grid view supports multiple events. So even if you could wire up a command, how does it know which event you're binding to? I guess they could have called it selection changed command, item click command, but we don't have that. So we don't have the ability to just slap a command on a grid view like this, the way we do have the ability to slap a command on a button, for example. So what we need to do, and let's not save these changes. Let's get rid of this. And get rid of this. And get rid of this. Because it's not going to work. And we got rid of that. Okay. So what are we going to do? Well, what we're going to do is, what we need to do is basically create our own relay command. We need to create a relay command that can be bound to a grid. And so in, to do that, we're going to create a grid view item click command. And I got this code from Jeff Weber Cross. Thank you very much, Jeff. He wrote this up on his blog a couple years ago, and I found this, and I've been using it ever since. So what we're going to do is we're going to create a generic command, if you will, because this, remember this relay, the relay command in common inherits from iCommand, or implements iCommand. We're going to create a generic relay command, because what we need to be able to do is we need to be able to pass the customer. Okay? So this grid view item click command, we're going to wind up doing is hooking up the item click event of the grid to grid view item click. Okay? And then we're going to execute a command, and we're going to pass literally what was clicked, e.clickedItem, which is going to be the customer, the selected customer or the selected project. Okay? And then what we're going to do in the main page is we're going to add a reference to this helper's namespace, which is where these two things are. And then we're going to add this. And this is how we do the commanding. Helpers, we're going to get grid view item click command.command, which is living in helpers, and then we're going to bind that to click customer. Right? So again, thanks to Jeff for writing the code that we now use that gives us the ability to add commands to elements in XAML that don't intrinsically support them out of the box. So now what we get to do in our main view model, now we do get to set up this click customer and identify that it's a relay command that's going to be taking a customer. It's using a generic relay command. All right, create a new relay help a new generic relay command of customer, which is going to run the code in click, and it takes a customer. So again, we defined it as literally receiving item click event args e and then passing clicked item. So we click a customer, that e gets passed to this click, we take the clicked item and we pass it to the command, which is why we needed to create a generic relay command. And then the command receives that customer, We can read its ID and then call the projects page. Make sense? And then what we get to do in the main page is get rid of that item click. We still have the selection changed, but it doesn't have any data code in it. It just has UI in it, and I'm happy with leaving that, right? So it's not pure MVVM in the sense that we still do have some code behind, but there's nothing wrong with that, and I think that's okay. It's certainly worth exploring how you get the main view model to control, how you get the view model to control the view. It's worth going into, but we're going to stop at this point. Okay, so what we've done, if we think about it, if we go back to slides and think about how far we've come, we've got our model that has all the data. We've got our view, which has little or no code behind. We've moved a huge amount of this into the view model. We've made huge progress in an hour. The stuff that we've done is not that terribly complicated. Yes, it took me a while to figure out the generic commanding, but happily somebody had done that work and blogged it, and his code works extremely well. So we've gotten very far. We've got the benefits of MVVM. So best approach to adopting MVVM, I say start from the beginning, which is what we did here. Explore the various pieces, understand what they offer, how to use them, and when it makes sense. You get to decide how much you want to do. You get to decide whether or not it is worth your time and effort to get this code out of the UI. It's work. Is it worth it? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. I think at this point, for my purposes, it's not as big a benefit as some of the other things we've done. I'd like to learn how to do it. I'd like to get better as being a developer. I'd like to figure out how to do this. I'd like to see if some of the frameworks out there make it easy to do. But I'm not sure. I mean, is this going to improve my testability? If I want to test whether this method works, I think I don't have a problem running the application and seeing. I run the application, I select a customer, the app bar should show up. I think that's something that I'm okay manually testing. I don't know that I need to remove this code necessarily to improve the testability. If, however, I wanted to use this type of code on multiple screens, then I might consider removing it and moving it into the view model. So it kind of depends. Be flexible. The goal of MVVM is not to impress people. The goal of MVVM is to not get some expert to say, oh, you're great at MVVM. The goal of MVVM is not to avoid a situation where someone comes and says, oh, you're stupid. You don't know how to use MVVM. Look at all you're doing. You still have all that code behind. You suck. You're terrible, right? You don't listen to people like that. Hopefully you don't know anybody who would do that to you. That's not the purpose of this. The purpose is to become better as a developer. Write less code, write better code, write more testable code. So use the pieces that make sense. Once you understand how it all works, then you should absolutely consider using an MVVM framework. There are a number of them out there. Mike Talty today is giving a talk on Prism. Which is a framework, Prism for the Windows Runtime, which is written by the Microsoft Patterns and Practices team. They wrote a version of Prism for WPF, Silverlight, and Windows Phone. They've written a version for the Windows Runtime, and Mike's giving a talk on that. There's the MVVM Lite Toolkit from Laurent Bognon, I hope I pronounced that correctly. That's an excellent version. Caliber and Micro, MVVM Foundation. I know Gil Clearin is here. He's done a lot of MVVM. I think that I relied on him more than anybody when I learned how to use MVVM. So he's here. There's a fair amount of stuff written about it. There's a fair number of frameworks. You should absolutely test some of those. When you get to the point where you are doing dependency injection and, you know, service locators and stuff like that, You probably do not want to write that code yourself. You absolutely want to go get a framework. But we've gotten as far as we've gotten today without having to rely on frameworks. So just a couple resources. I did this as a Channel 9 episode, so if you want to watch that, here it is. My blog has these notes with the step-by-step, and then all of this code is available. I will give it to the conference guys. This version's a little bit... I think the only difference between the version that's up here and the version you're going to get is... where was it? This right here. The version that I posted on MSDN doesn't have that. Otherwise, and I should probably go update that now that I think about it. So you can get the code through the conference. You can get the code on MSDN. So what I hope we've done here is demystified MVVM. It looks like a very big topic. It looks like something you have to go and adopt those frameworks and learn how they use. And I think that's kind of backwards. I think you learn how to do it on your own first, and then you graduate to using those frameworks when you decide that you don't want to have to write the code yourself. You do want to rely on a framework. I think that's the way to do it. You can do MVVM the way we've been doing it here by yourself. You absolutely should check out the frameworks. And there are a lot of benefits to it. I think we've now kind of seen how to get some of the benefits, what it kind of looks like. And I hope this has been very useful. Thank you for your time. And fill out the evals. And thanks.
Uit voor welk platform of voor welke techniek? Azure spreekt alle talen en praat met